All right, she is going. This is an interview with Dr. Melvin Simpson of the Department of
Biochemistry.
On January 11, 1988. All right, we have these questions, Mel. And as long as this little light is on, things are going reasonably well.
Okay.
Fine.
Do I need to talk particularly loudly, or is this okay?
I think that will pick it up.
Okay, fine.
Question one, name, department, rank, or position?
Okay, Melvin V. Simpson, Department of Biochemistry, Professor, American Cancer Society Professor.
American Cancer Society Professor.
Yeah.
I see. You want to explain that just?
Oh, well, that's, we had one other person at Stony Brook who had that award. That was Seymour Cohn. It's given for particularly meritorious work. If I hadn't been chairman of the department, I would have continued to be on a salary paid by the Cancer Society rather than Stony Brook. It's a lifetime award. If you take an administrative position, you have to give up the salary, but you can still retain the title, and the nice thing about it is they give me $10,000 a year, whether I ask for it or not, to be used in research.
Right.
So it's a nice little bonus.
Fine. What year did you come to Stony Brook?
1966.
And how old were you at the time? Mathematics?
Yeah. So it seems impossible, but 45, it's hard to believe. That's right.
All right. From what institution and position did you come?
I was an American Cancer Society professor at Dartmouth.
At Dartmouth?
Yeah,
I see.
And I came from there. Prior to that, I was at Yale for many years.
Many years. Do you know any physics? Biophysics.
What are you thinking?
I was going to say Ernie Pollard, but I don't think.
Well, yeah, I knew Ernie Pollard.
Is it?
At Yale.
At Yale, right. Okay. Who was primarily responsible for your coming to Stony Brook?
I think Bentley Glass.
Really?
Bentley Glass had heard that there was a huge eruption at Dartmouth and that as a result of a big internal battle, the molecular biologists were leaving, and it was a very powerful molecular biology set up there.
I see.
And he came up and made hay, or tried anyway, to recruit people.
I see.
And I had heard that Cian Yang was here. I'd never heard of Stony Brook before.
Yes. Right.
And
that's quite possible.
Yeah. Figured that, gosh, if Yang was here, it must be a place with lots of possibilities. So.
Right. Who interviewed you for the position here?
I guess it was Frank Erk.
Frank Erk? Is that right? He was chairman of the department then?
Yes.
Okay. Why did you come?
Well, it was really fertile ground, new university. There wasn't the biochemistry department, so I could start forming one.
They wanted you to
do scratch, yes. And I could see myself getting things accomplished without a battle about everything, since this was kind of a nice big oasis, and you could build what you please around it. So
you had some more freedom than you had at Dartmouth.
Well, I wasn't in that position at Dartmouth. I wasn't the chairman there.
I see.
And in fact, in those days, I really didn't want to be the chairman. In fact, I didn't really want to. I was looking for a horizontal move. Being an American Cancer Society professor and being paid by the Cancer Society is a nice position to be in. You're not obligated to the university. Your time is your own. And, and spend full time on research. But I felt that this place had a lot of opportunities.
What was your understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook? And what was the vision being transformed into reality?
Well, it was to be a full-fledged university, and I liked that. In fact, I liked being at a university more than I do at a med school. And I had only been at medical schools before coming here. And I'm interested in many, many intellectual activities, and which are absent in medical schools. For example, I take courses in archaeology here. So I like it, and I have friends in various departments. I expected this to be a first-class university. I didn't quite buy the Berkeley of the East because I remember that, and that didn't fool me at all, because I know that it takes a very long time, and I knew then to create a first-class place. Nevertheless, I thought this would become a very good place.
Okay. What were your impressions of Stony Brook when you first came? The campus, the people, the leadership, and the spirit.
Well, with respect to the campus, I suppose that's best illustrated by a story we all know, when a line of students formed outside of Johnny Toll's office, and each of whom was carrying a Dixie cup full of mud, and they planted all this on his desk and marched out. Do you remember that? Well, that's about how the campus was. But it was very exciting, because I don't remember the number, but if I were to say that 30 buildings were being built at about that time, all at once, I wouldn't be very far from being accurate. There were a lot of buildings at the same time. So the campus was mud. Now, what else was there? Not only the campus.
Well, not only the campus, the people and the leadership.
Yeah.
And the spirit.
Yeah. Well, I thought the leadership was really just so-so, to tell you the truth, with the exception of Johnny Toll. I thought he was a tremendous builder. It was quite true that if you came to Johnny, that he really wouldn't listen part of the time. But if you came to him with a proposition, and I decided then I would work just through Bentley and Johnny Toll. If you came to him and you were trying to recruit somebody who was really hot and very good, I had never seen anybody jump up and down and get so excited as Johnny Toll. Therefore, it was encouraging. If you were a chairman at that time, it was tremendously encouraging. He was very positive. And he was a great builder. In fact, I think he left when he should have left. And all the building was over. It was just right.
He was after high quality.
Yes.
And I think Sam Gould was after the same thing.
I didn't know him at all, and in fact, don't know much about that era.
What events, what persons, what experiences stand out?
Oh, yeah, I have a few stories to tell. Well, first of all, I'd like to comment about Bentley Glass. Bentley, to us in biology, was absolutely terrific, extremely positive. He had a very good knowledge of people in the field and who was good and who wasn't. If you came to Bentley with a really good proposition, either with respect to recruiting or a good idea, you got a positive response. I think Bentley was particularly good to biochemistry. And I have said that many times in introducing him here and there, so I'll never forget Bentley. Yes, we're just terrific.
Yeah. Well, to be a geneticist, you have to be a biochemist.
Yeah, well, you don't have to. In those days, you didn't, but he was unusual. He had a certain kind of genius. He used to write summaries of the highly technical biochemical meetings. These meetings were held in Baltimore at Hopkins. They were the Johns Hopkins meetings, and they may have had some other name. And the summaries were absolutely outstanding in these volumes. So Bentley is an unusual person, and I think he made life... He
made life very nice.
Good. Good. Anybody else besides John Toll and Bentley?
Well,
see, Alec was...
Of course, there's Ed Pellegrino, so I should mention how I got to know Pellegrino and how it came to be that he came here. I mentioned a little earlier in this interview this big battle at Dartmouth. It was a battle of the old versus the new versus the old, and almost a classical battle. In this case, the...
Who was chairman of biology there?
This wasn't in biology, though. This was in the medical school, and I don't remember who the chairman of biology was.
I see.
This was in the med school itself, and basically the fight was between biochemistry and microbiology on the one hand, and the other departments on the other, which were very classical departments. As a result of this fight, the dean was forced to resign because he took sides, which was a bad thing to do. He should have knocked all heads, you see, and not just taken off on us.
Yeah.
So we were looking around for another dean, and somebody, I no longer remember who, suggested Pellegrino. Pellegrino came, and I must say, the molecular biologists and we were just taken by him. We thought he was terrific. And we felt that he would play a center role, but a very firm one, and would stop all this nonsense. So we were all for Ed. The other side was not absolutely opposed. And so Ed didn't get the offer. And after a few months, the whole thing broke down, and 21 people left. Within a few months, within a year, let us say. But I remember Ed Pellegrino. And when I came here, the medical school was just in the planning stage, and perhaps Bentley asked me, or perhaps I volunteered this. I knew we were looking for a head of the whole business, and I suggested Ed Pellegrino and told him the story of Ed and how outstanding a person we thought he was. And he was clearly a great builder, came across. And from then on, Bentley took over and Pellegrino was recruited. So that's the story.
Good. Good. Well, it was certainly a tremendous appointment.
Oh, yeah. A great builder.
Right.
And I do have another story
that
came to mind, and that is how the Fine Arts Center got approved for being built. In this story, I was simply an instrument, but it's an interesting story nevertheless. Bentley knew I was interested in classical music, and I wanted that Fine Arts Center very much. You know, there weren't very many people here in those days, so everybody talked to everybody. And there was a visitor to the campus who was an old wartime friend of mine, and who was one of the world's great musicologists. His name is Joe Kerman, and in fact, he was a distinguished lecturer here many years later. He's come here a number of times, the last time as a distinguished lecturer. Anyway, Joe stayed over at my house, and I suggested to Bentley that, you know, we had such a fantastic music department. If I could get Joe to say so, and to give an estimate of that, of our music department, Bentley had informed me, excuse me, I'm talking a little bit ahead of myself here. Bentley had told me that the following day he was going up to Albany to a meeting to push for the Fine Arts Center, and it was at that meeting that the decision would be made whether to build it or not to build it. I said, I could write down exactly what Joe Kerman said. And Bentley said, terrific idea, get it to me and put it under my door as late as necessary. And I spent the evening with Joe, he was staying over, he gave an assessment of the department, which was a tremendous assessment. I wrote it all up, typed it up with typo errors and everything else, got it under Bentley's door at 2 a.m. Bentley got it in the morning and flew to Albany, and Bentley said that the letter was instrumental in getting the fine art sent to Apuley. So it was really Joe Kerman and Bentley, but I happened to be an instrument in that, and I'm rather proud of that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. You certainly need all kinds of instruments when you're dealing with the central office.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yes, let me think.
Experiences? Do you have any conferences here?
Well, I used to be chairman of a study section, an NIH fellowship section, and I had them here a few times. It's not really a conference, and we'd work at night, and I would take them sailing in the daytime. I was a great sailor in those days. But no, I didn't initiate conferences. I must say that Mazzaioli, in a way, did. He was chairman until... I-N-O-U-Y-E. And he initiated a continuing conference, which is now internationally known, and which we have every year. Very important.
What do you call it? What's the name of it?
Stony Brook. You want the official name?
Yes.
Shut that off for a minute. I'll get it for you, okay?
All right.
May as well get the name. Is it on?
Yep. She's okay. Going.
The formal name is Stony Brook Symposium on Molecular Biology. The topic varies from year to year. There have been 7 conferences so far. The 8th is coming up. And it's usually advertised in a leaflet like this. Well, the only symposium that I could tell you about, which I had nothing to do with, was one in my honor for my 65th birthday. But I'm not sure that's of interest to the university at all.
What was the subject of the conference?
Oh, I think subjects were varied because all my former students and postdocs.
Former students.
And collaborators, some of whom are very famous.
When was it held?
Where?
When?
Oh, when? Okay. Yes, October 20th, 1986.
86.
Okay. I'd forgotten all about it, and I happened to pick this folder up with the other.
All right. Did you have any relations with Brookhaven?
Yes. We started relations with Brookhaven, I did, very early, perhaps in my first or second year as chairman. And
you came as chairman, is that right?
Well, there wasn't anything to be chairman of at that time.
I see.
So I came as a professor and started to recruit people for a biochemistry section in the Division of Biological Sciences. As soon as there were enough people so that it would be worthwhile for us to have a secretary and an office and everything else, we became a department. So I think maybe 2 years elapsed before, that I don't remember accurately, before we became...
Well, you were recruiting then from 66 to 69, 70?
Well, I was recruiting until I stopped being chairman, and I was chairman for about 10 years.
10 years, I see. My relation with Brookhaven.
Well, yes, that's right. So a number of people were appointed as adjunct professors from the Brookhaven lab, and we've continued that kind of thing. One of them, very important person, Bill Studier, is still with us, and we see him quite often. And
what is his work?
At that time, he was interested in the physical chemistry of DNA. He now has gotten more biological, and he's famous for elucidating the mode of replication and transcription and just about everything we know about a particular virus called T7. It's a bacterial virus, phage, T7. And he's brilliant. He received the presidential award. He's one of these people you like to talk about because he works in a very small lab, not a big operation, but his output is tremendous. And he's a person of genius.
Okay.
We also have had equivalent relationships with Cold Spring Harbor. And in fact, the department, through the influence of Bentley, helped out Cold Spring Harbor very much in its dark days. Goodness, it doesn't need any help anymore, it's rich. But in those days, before Jim Watson took over, there was a problem of keeping someone at Stony Brook, and I say someone because his name escapes me now, though I know him very well, and because they could not offer him tenure. And we did. They wanted to keep him very badly, and we said, okay, if something happens at Cold Spring Harbor and his salary can't be paid, we'll do it. Bentley approved this. It was approved by the president. He would become a member of this department.
Pardon, Cirillo. Not Vince Cirillo.
No, Vince was a regular member of this department. No, this is... Well, I'll get you his name after the interview.
Okay.
I just have to think of it. It's ridiculous that I can't.
All right. Did you deal at all with Albany yourself?
No, I really didn't. There were times when I was tempted to fight for certain things, and I thought I would waste my career battling Albany.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't, and I usually circumvented Albany by sometimes legal and sometimes other means. But I wasn't willing to deal with Albany.
Okay. The inferences are that you couldn't get support, or you couldn't get understanding or comprehension.
Well, Albany was very bureaucratic.
Yes.
And I remember the difficulty we used to have with capital equipment orders and things of that sort. It was excruciating.
Yeah.
But you either devoted yourself to that, or you devoted yourself to research and taking care of your department. And so it was that and other things which I no longer remember, but I do remember the sense of frustration dealing with all that.
Right.
And I remember it also with respect to, I was very heavily involved in the design, and I don't mean architecturally speaking, but in the planning and whatnot of the medical school. Because there were very few people here then.
Right.
You see, Ed was here, and a few other people, and myself.
I was on every
research committee. At any rate, Albany was horrible in that respect, with respect to the planning of the medical school. There was a guy there, I think his name was Stevens.
Yes. Stevens.
Impossible.
Alwyn Stevens.
Yeah, impossible. I remember the frustration. But, of course, Ed Pellegrino knew how to reel a deal, and he was very good at that.
Do you remember Al Knudsen?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to interview him on the 19th.
You have to give him my very best regards.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Down in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
What was your understanding of your own place in the future of Stony Brook? Why do you think you were appointed? You've covered that to a certain extent, but let's review it.
Well, I came here to become chairman, so that's clear.
Chairman of
biochemistry.
Of biochemistry,
right. And so that turned out okay.
What about the relation between, or the place of biochemistry in the PhD program and in the medical school?
I could say something about that. For a while, when there was plenty of money, it was, first of all, a very good thing to be both in the core campus and in the med school, because you could get support from both.
At that time, we didn't want to shift over to the medical school. There was a big move to try to get us to shift over. And Bentley was opposed to it. I was too, because we had a tremendous amount of TA support here, and wouldn't be able to get very much in the medical school.
CA?
TA, teaching assistant.
Teaching, yes, right.
Support for graduate students.
Right.
And so that was ideal. There was a lot of it. On the other hand, when money became tight, biochemistry tended to fall through the cracks a little bit because the core campus would say, "Why don't you try the med school?" And the med school would do the same.
Yeah.
So there was that. There was a point, though, when we decided there was a low point on the core campus, and we thought maybe it would be a good idea to shift over to the med school. But at that point, there was a lot of politics involved, and some of the people in the med school, Maynard Dewey and being one, and then chairman of Vandekloot, who was chairman of physiology then, being another, suddenly developed a great affection for the Division of Biological Sciences, saying that we should stay here and support the division. But in reality, they were worried about competition for funds if we went over there. So that pretty well scotched it. Right now, things are very good, I think that whether we went over there or stayed here wouldn't make much difference. And we're getting support from both, and particularly with the new dean, who is really very refreshing and a go-getter and very intelligent and energetic and whatnot.
What's his name?
Jordan Cohn.
Cohn.
We think he's terrific. Absolutely terrific. So.
That's good. Now, he succeeded Marvin Krishna?
Yes.
I see. How have your expectations worked out, the expectations with which you came to the university, both personally and institutionally?
Well, I'm pretty positive about Stony Brook. See, I don't have a blind and unrealistic expectations about places or people, and so I didn't expect magic. I know that I complained a good deal to Johnny Toll about, and this is still true, and I still don't like it, about people who simply do not live in the area. Now, I have a great resentment of people of that sort. I don't think they should be around. I think they should be kicked out, with the exception of performing artists. So there's no question there. Performing artists has to be in New York, in Northern New York. And if you can get a really good one to come out here, it's great. But other than that, there are too many people to whom students have no access. Fellow faculty members have no access. They're never around. And Johnny told me, well, he couldn't help it at that time. Stony Brook was young, and you couldn't really get good people unless you did that. But it's renamed. And I tell you, if I were president, I would really do something about it. Okay. That just gets something off my chest for the record. However, I think Stony Brook is clearly on the way up. And the way up is not a linear, smooth linear path. It has plateaus and it has downhills and whatnot. The biochemistry department for 2 or 3 years has been in a rather plateau or even a little downhill. We now have recruited a fantastic chairman, very famous guy.
What's his name?
Bill Lennartz. He's now president of the Society of Biological Chemists, very famous scientist, terrific chairman.
L-E-N-N-E-R?
Yes, A-R-Z.
A-R-Z,
yeah.
Lennartz.
And so we're really rolling again. I think most of the medical school departments, insofar as basic sciences go,
the only thing really that I'm really competent to talk about, are very good. In this building, there are excellent departments in the Division of Biological Sciences.
All right, talk about that just a little bit, because I want to make sure that I understand how the old department has gradually been subdivided as it grew.
Yes, right. Well, things started off, and suppose I start with 1966, and sometime if you get around to it, Vince Cirillo can fill you in from 64 to 66.
Fine.
There was just a Division of Biological Sciences. I think Frank Erck would have preferred to keep it as one division, and it was called the department. And he didn't like the idea of my calling biochemistry a Division of Biochemistry, because he didn't like the word. He didn't like the department to be divided. So we called it Biochemistry Section. Section means the same thing, though. There were no other divisions or categories. Biochemistry was the first one, and then I recall we were trying to recruit an ecologist, and we got Larry Slobodkin. And when Larry came, he started recruiting for, better shut this off for the moment.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't have my
excuse. No, it's all right.
Okay. So we had then biochemistry and ecology, and I wish I could help you with the exact years in which this happened. That's a problem, but if you interview Larry Slobodkin, he can probably tell you when he arrived. Of course he can.
And I've already interviewed him.
Okay, yeah. So you have the date.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the last to be formed was neurobiology. So these are three important departments. Now, one other reorganization took place. About 3 years ago, perhaps 4 years ago, something of that sort. These new departments, it turned out, did not include certain people who were doing other things in science. They didn't really include very well Frank Erck, and they didn't include a number of other people.
Bob Merriam?
Bob, exactly. There were a number of others. But neither were these people all doing the same thing, so they couldn't have a separate department. So what happened was, in the reorganization, various people were assigned to the existing departments. So we have a number of them in biochemistry, and some of them are good researchers. Some of them are mainly teachers. It wasn't that, it's just that they were doing things which didn't put them in the proper existing categories. And that's worked out very well. I don't think anybody is terribly unhappy, and we treat the people in our department. Abe Corian has a lot of research money, he's a good researcher. But in any case, we treat them as though they were biochemists, regular members of the department. I don't know how they feel about it, but as far as we don't feel they're second-class citizens.
Right.
It's not a big thing.
There was a group I heard that left for Princeton.
Yes.
Where did they come from?
Princeton. Yeah. They came from Princeton. They went back there.
Yeah, I see.
Well, Princeton, biology at Princeton had really gone downhill. This happens in all universities, the one discipline or another. It happened at Harvard 20 years previously. And so biology, which had been a major force at Princeton, simply was down to almost zero. Princeton resolved to fix it up, and it got a hold of $40 million or some such figure, a lot of money.
My goodness.
And attracted the people here, amongst others, and So they left back to Princeton. I don't think it was not a question of unhappiness with Stony Brook, however. They had a real good department downstairs and very productive, and as far as I know, they were pretty happy here. But you can't resist that. It's Princeton to start with. It's $40 million. You know, and so it's an offer you can't refuse.
Somebody gave it to them.
Well, I don't know that it was one person, but they... I don't know the origins of the money, except I know they had a big campaign. But I do not know how many individuals were involved.
Okay. Let's see. Did you yourself ever do any work at Brookhaven?
No.
You didn't need any of the big machines,
no.
In other words?
No. I used to be on some committees there. So.
I see. To what extent was your field involved in brain chemistry or
neuroscience?
Neuroscience.
Yes, to a reasonable extent, because I think I saw the future very, very early as far as the neurosciences go. And I felt that molecular biology was the way to go in neurosciences. And so I recruited somebody very early in the game, Jakob Schmidt, who is a neuroscientist, and he's still with us. And he's a member of their program and that kind of thing as well. Of course, now what they're doing is hiring molecular biologists upstairs.
Upstairs?
That is in neuroscience, yes.
I see.
The field at that time was mainly one of the electrical activity of the nervous system. Ion penetration and channels and that sort of thing. And it's still very important, but molecular biology has now entered the game.
What's the chemical basis for being a genius?
Oh, no. Ask them.
Okay. Well, one question was, what do you feel you have accomplished at Stony Brook? You have outlined that. You want to summarize it? You started the department?
I guess started the department. I think the department is a pretty good one. There was a time when it was an outstanding one. Until Inouye left, because with Inouye, a number of other people left to go with him. And
where did he go?
He went to almost Moctezuma's revenge in this sense. He went to Rutgers. It was very clear that
Alec Gibson,
pulled people out of Stony Brook. So he got Inouye is very, very good scientist. And I don't know whether he did the right thing or not. I didn't think he did the right thing. But Inouye was fed up with the administration. He wasn't easy to deal with himself, but the administration wasn't very responsive. They really didn't. And that includes Jack. Put that on the record. I think there's been a change, maybe as a result of that, in Jack, I have to say. Because they have been so responsive to us. I mean, he didn't realize, first of all, the stature of Inouye.
Yes.
And I got a meeting together, although I wasn't chairman, and we all went to see Jack, and we told him about him and what was happening, that could Jack do anything, it might not be too late. He was on the verge of accepting the offer, and Jack asked, is he really that good? And he asked around the table. He didn't know. He was insulated from it. And then he gave us everything. It was too late. And from that point on, he has been terrific. And I think he really felt, this is my estimate, that he goofed on Inouye. At any rate, I think the administration is being very good to us.
Yeah.
Extremely.
Awesome.
And of course, it's the science now. It's the clearly the seminal science in the biological science. I mean, the whole business of cloning and everything else comes from biochemistry and molecular biology. Everybody's using it. Everybody else uses the clinical methods, but it all stems from molecular biology. So it's very important to have a powerful setup here.
Do you think there's any subdivision between the mind and the self in chemical functions?
Well, I'm not sure I'm the right person to ask. As a biochemist, though, I have to say that I don't see that there's any meaning in that question.
Uh-huh.
That's perhaps the way a biochemist would answer it, a molecular biologist would answer it. I honestly don't see the meaning in the question, which probably should tell you something. It's an answer in itself.
I'm interested in the structure of values and both as dependent upon categories of objective reality and the categories of the valuer, man the valuer. And you get into the structure of man himself. You have to deal with the body, the brain, including the brain, and then what we call the mind, and then what has been known as the soul or the self or the ego, the superego or the psyche. Since the Greeks.
No question that there are higher levels of organization. That is, I don't think it all stems from the passage of one electrical current from one cell to another, but it's all in here.
It's all inside the skull.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
But levels of organization, no question about it. And I think it's very clear that one cannot, some physicists think maybe you can, but you have to know far more than we know now, but if you have a particular level of organization and if you add up all the components in it, you'll still not be able to predict everything about what a higher level of organization will do. And maybe that's what you're talking about, but nevertheless, it's still all in.
Okay. Are there questions that I should have asked you?
No. I have a feeling I'm forgetting things with respect to incidents and stories which reflect the development of Stony Brook. That's my only problem.
Two things, then. The quality of your students, both undergraduate and graduates, and the character of student life as you have seen it. And the other is the quality of the faculty and the extent to which there is a community of scholars.